And welcome. Good morning, everybody. Dennis Rahm on LakeChelanNow.com as we begin our COVID-19 coronavirus roundtable here conducted in Chelan as we are at the Lake Chelan School District office. Thanks to Barry DePauli making his boardroom here available for this conversation today, which really is what it's going to be. I want to introduce first off our panel of guests, if I can do that. They are Barry DePauli, Superintendent, Lake Chelan School District. Matt Charlton over here, Superintendent, Manson School District. Bob Getty, Mayor of Chelan. George Rorick, seated over here, the CEO, Lake Chelan Community Hospital. Ray Eichmeyer, the EMS Director, is seated right here in the uniform. Maria Sirois, Chief Quality Officer for Lake Chelan Community Hospital. And off to my left here, Mary Louise Jones, Clinic Administrator for Columbia Valley Community Health, CVCH, more known as. So we thank each of you for being here today. And let's begin the process just with a couple of things. Certainly this is a situation as we talk and have discussion here today. Some numbers may be quoted. Likely by the time we're done with our conversation, those numbers will be changing because that's how fluid this situation is. But we want to get to a number of issues that will be, I think, of pertinence, hopefully, to the folks that live here in the Lake Chelan Valley. But to just give an update quickly on some of the developments that have happened in the last 24 hours, literally, we've had a 30-day travel ban imposed on European countries, some 26 countries. The NBA has suspended their season until further notice. NCAA has canceled March Madness and all of their other remaining winter and spring championships. K through 12 schools have been closed in King, Pierce, Snohomish counties through April 24th. All schools in Maryland, now Ohio and Michigan, they've been added to that list, are closed. And King, Pierce, Snohomish counties, the governor has imposed a ban of gatherings of 250 or more. President Trump recently made the statement that domestic travel bans could be considered in Washington State and or California because of the high incidence of the coronavirus. And nursing home restrictions are in place, including here in North Central Washington. Cancellations of obviously of major conferences, festivals, concerts going on throughout the country. We mentioned some of the sports, also Major League Baseball delaying the start of their season by 2 weeks. PGA Tour events will be played without spectators. Many of the live television shows, initially they were going to be held without studio audiences. I know some of the late night shows, they've been canceled in their entirety. Closures in California of Disneyland Park, Disney California Adventure, Universal Studios Hollywood, and you can literally go on and on. So I think suffice it to say, despite how some people may say, well, it's not that big a deal, it's like the flu, certainly the consequences are becoming a big deal, which we'll hear about here today. And then lastly, before we turn it over to the panel, from the Chelan-Douglas Health District, this was as of yesterday, at least 12 of our counties in Washington State of the 39 have now reported COVID-19 cases. Over the age over 60, those with chronic diseases, heart diseases, or respiratory issues, and pregnant women, they are being advised by the health district to stay home as much as possible in the coming weeks to minimize exposure. There has been urging of cancellation of in-person group events, especially 20 or more. We'll talk about that, how that's affecting things here in Chelan. Use a 6-foot separation space whenever you can. And thus far in the state of Washington, 457 confirmed cases, and that probably is already a different number right now. 31 deaths reported in Washington State, including one nearby in Grant County. All right, with that said, let's turn it over first here to Mr. Barry DePauli, the superintendent of Lake Chelan School District. Barry, I know you've been involved with probably meeting with many of these people in this room, with fellow educators, a lot of things happening in our school districts. What's the battle plan? What's been up with Lake Chelan?
Yeah, I guess the first thing I'll say is it's been really a great opportunity to collaborate amongst all our superintendents, health officials. I think Matt made the comment the other day that he feels like he's my new brother, and we're in constant contact, several calls per day. So we're taking this very seriously. I think the message for that I'd like to get out today is for our districts in the Valley. It's really about being prepared and not panicking. So we are in constant meetings. We have a crisis planning team. We just had a great meeting this morning with our food service, transportation, and maintenance supervisors, and we're now looking at planning for an imminent closure. Not sure when that had happened. I think Matt can update us. He was on a Zoom meeting this morning. But we are looking at how to best serve our students in most need. So in terms of getting them food to different places in the valley, we're working collegially. And it was just a really great meeting to work together and, you know, figure out how best to serve our students. The challenge will be how do we educate our students, and we're in constant collaboration about that as well. So we're looking at the possibility of an online platform. We've contacted Thrive to see if we could get some help with connectivity where we don't have good signals for internet. So we are, I think, in a very good place in terms of our planning. I think our staff has been extremely cooperative, both on the maintenance and operations side, as well as the teaching side. We're doing the best we can. I think my biggest concern, to be honest, is just the anxiety that this may cause our children. So we have our principals talking to groups of students to reassure them. I think that's something we want to be aware of in our latest update. I think both Matt and I addressed that with some precautions and on how to speak with your children, so that, you know, the main thing is to keep calm and in these situations, you know, instill a sense of hope. We're going to get through this. We have some great people we're working with, fantastic health professionals, and like I said, it's been really good for me to work together closely with Matt and the superintendents throughout the region.
Barry, I know you've had a number of cancellations already of things, the SAT testing, for example, some of the athletic sporting events, even some of those that were scheduled to be outside. There has been kind of a close down of areas of the school, at least I know at Mo, where parents, adults can only get to a certain point, not move beyond that. After's programs have been shut down. And so many activities that go on, obviously, at a school district. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, even though it's obviously down the line and we're talking later in the spring, but you have to plan, I know, and that's much of what you're doing. What about things like graduation, which you pack a gymnasium and you have the graduation program? Are you making alternative plans for a graduation if this were to continue?
Yeah, we haven't quite got that far, Dennis, but we are certainly looking at how to best handle those situations. We're in communications daily. I think that's a bit far ahead for us yet. We're going to look at seeing you know, how long the school closure may be, and again, we're going to be, you know, in constant contact. But it is a difficult situation when you think about being a senior, and you know, you're going to lose probably seasons. I think the next step will be, we'll likely be canceling athletics, which is a really sad time. But we've lost band concerts. You know, we have a trip to Disneyland that's ahead of us, fifth grade trip at Mo. And I think the difficult thing for people too is to get used to the social distancing. So, you know, when I send out a letter and I'm asking parents who traditionally walk their students into classrooms at our elementary student or elementary schools, and to shut that down isn't an easy decision, but it's the right decision. We really have to limit social interaction, and we've had nothing but cooperation from parents. I think parents have been extremely understanding. They're looking to us for, you know, good leadership, and now's the time to step up and be really confident and work together with groups of people that are here. And I know this community is resilient, and we'll get through this, and it's about really protecting not just ourselves, but the elderly. You know, we have an obligation to work closely as a community to look after each other, and I think that's where we're at right now in this community.
All right, thank you, Barry. We may get back around to you, but we certainly want to welcome in now Manson School Superintendent Matt Charlton. Matt's going to have to exit our meeting a little bit early here today, so we want to make sure he has the opportunity. I want to pass his microphone around, and Matt, if you can just kind of fill us in on what's been happening with the Manson School District, maybe what kind of reaction you're getting from parents as well.
Well, thanks, Dennis. I apologize. I have to head back. Our staff is meeting right now. We had a pre-planned professional development day, so we actually didn't have school today. And we had a series of trainings on technology and on culturally responsive teaching. We scrapped those plans, and today our staff is actually working on, if we had a closure, what would that look like in Manson? And Barry has been a great partner through this, and we've shared a lot of our thinking along with other superintendents, and I really think our districts are aligned in the steps we're going to take. Today was an opportunity that we're using, and so right now we have teams of school staff working on how could we provide childcare if we had a school shutdown for our first responders, for for our healthcare staff, and also for families that they don't have another alternative for childcare. So if there were a shutdown, what would that look like? We've got a team working on how do we talk to students about this appropriately with, you know, elementary, middle school, and high school age? How do we share factual but not create a panic with those students and also with parents? We've got a group working on, so for middle school and elementary age kids, what we're thinking about doing is if we have to provide an educational program, it will probably be a literacy emphasis and thinking about how we could continue to have kids grow with support from their parents in literacy and teach from afar, and what vehicles will we use there. And at the high school level, like I think Chelan, we're looking at, could we do an online delivery system? Could we continue to have instruction using technology? We have a at least in the high school level, we have a one-to-one computer laptop for every student. So could we do it in an online delivery system and continue to have kids, especially our seniors, earning those credits towards graduation? And finally, we have a group that's working on what can we do to prepare for a shutdown if we have school next week? How can we start to prepare our students and families for that? You alluded to this, Barry, there is a discussion right now going on with the governor and with the ESD superintendents around the state. So there's nine regions, and they are discussing right now if a shutdown will be called statewide. And so we're waiting to hear that information and timing and those type of things. But I think in the school community, what Barry and I are hearing is a shutdown will be happening in our region and possibly statewide. It's a matter of when. And you're seeing other states do that. So that's the mindset that we've had in the last couple of days, is if and when this occurs, how can we still support our community and our families so that we can, one thing we're looking at is how do we provide food service to our families and many of our children? That breakfast and lunch meal is so critical for them. It may be the only quality meal they get. How could we continue that in a new format? What we're looking at is maybe using our existing bus routes and delivering food. And how could we do that and continue and practice good social distancing and all those sanitary issues that we have to think about? But those are the types of conversations that we're having today. And I think our community and our families need to know that it's shifting from how can we keep schools open safely to probably our schools probably are looking at a shutdown at some point. How can we continue to help serve our community and help the agencies that are taking care of all of us? So that's some important work going on right now in both of our school districts.
So Matt, in Manson, are there restrictions in place currently at your various schools in terms of the public being able to access?
Barry did a nice job of explaining. It's kind of been a progression. So first, last week we were thinking, how can we sanitize? How can we teach kids good hygiene? Having staff teach and model. This week it's been more, now we're starting to restrict. So athletics, first indoor athletics were canceled. As of yesterday, all athletic competitions and games were canceled. We're still allowing outdoor athletic practices to continue as of today. I suspect that will probably be changing, as Barry alluded to. We are restricting access from volunteers and community members coming into our schools, and very, very limited parental access to our schools, only on kind of a business required type of thing. And so, yeah, as of today, it has become more restrictive. And I think if we are in session next week, you'll see us continue to try to put systems in place to do that social distance piece as best we can.
One more question, Matt, I'd like to ask of you, because I do know you have to leave. In both the Madison and Lake Chelan school districts, there are many students who have parents that English is not their first language. What is the communication channel, and is it more challenging to get the word out to the non-English speaking families?
We're used to working with families, all our families in the school district, and we have interpretation, translation. So for instance, Barry, I know, sent out a message. We sent out a message, and when we do it in both English and Spanish. We have Spanish-speaking staff in our schools that are able to answer those questions. We are using our existing structures to continue to communicate with all of our families in our community. So that isn't a hurdle that we really are having to adapt too much to. One new element that we discussed this morning that I think should be a discussion in this group is we're seeing an influx of West Side families. We're seeing in our community in Manson a lot of people coming to their second homes from the Seattle area. And that's going to be a new dynamic that we hadn't thought about. I had a request this morning to have students that are now in our community practice with our track team and use our facilities and practice alongside our kids. And so we've not yet made a determination on that, but if you think about it, that would provide for some cross-contamination opportunities, and it's adding a new element to our community here. So those are new dynamics that I think we in the Valley are going to have to think about, is an influx of people maybe thinking they can outrun this. And I don't know if that's going to be the case.
Be interesting to have our health professionals weigh in on that, because certainly the preponderance of the cases are from the west side right now in comparison to eastern Washington, so that certainly would enter in another dynamic into the mix. Matt, thank you. If you want to pass it down to our Honorable Mayor Bob Getty here, and we'll get a little perspective on what the city is doing. Bob, I know this topic was discussed at your recent city council meeting. I know you put out a letter basically addressing some of the things that the city is gearing up for, but from the city standpoint, where are you at, and how are you looking at this?
Well, just for instance, we had a staff meeting this morning to get the information out to our people. So then, you know, what is the biggest situation we see is essential services. If our staff that runs a water sewer plant, wastewater, we're in deep trouble. So we're trying to double back and make sure those people will have backup and be able to run those operations as well as a garbage truck. So that's kind of where we're at, and it's we may close the face of City Hall like the PUD did if we have an outbreak and it comes to that level, as well as Public Works and the Planning Department will just shut the doors and submit paper either or the information over the internet and go from there.
So for right now, no restrictions at City Hall. People come and go and do their business as normal. Is staff being encouraged, for example, to observe the 6-foot distance and not to shake hands and do elbow bumps and toe taps or whatever?
Right, and we have disinfectant on the counters as well as wipes for the countertops. And from that point out, then we're just going to try to be ready for whatever happens. There's some other questions that we receive that I would like to find the answers to, and if I can quickly read those questions, and maybe before this is over, we can find some of the answers.
Bob, I know also it has come up recently, we put a story up to dispel the rumors about the Top Dog Parade. Social media was floating around information that it had been canceled. In talking to Pat Kelly yesterday, he said, no, I know you heard more now. There have been apparently rumors suggesting that the city had canceled the parade, and as of now, as we're speaking, that is not the case, correct?
That is not the case. I announced that on Cozy this morning, and taking into consideration, it's probably going to be 28 degrees tomorrow, so dress warmly, take your dog for a walk, and you in kilts are probably going to need some help.
All right, Bob. Thank you very much for your comments. Feel free to weigh in as we continue on with this conversation if you would like to do that. Right now, I'd like to welcome in, and we'll pass these along if I can ask it, we're going to welcome in Mr. George Rorick, Lake Chelan Community Hospital CEO. And George, what a way to get welcome to the community.
We have all kinds of listeners and viewers online right now that are asking why you're not sanitizing the mic. And we've been assured that all of you sanitized when you came in.
Yes.
And the mic and all equipment have been sanitized as well.
All right, yes.
So that is why we are passing the mic between people.
If people could not hear that, hands have been sanitized. We wiped down everything with sanitizing materials on the microphones and all the equipment, the tabletops, all of that took place here today.
So but we're very happy that they're watching.
Thank you for your concern. Yes, we do appreciate that. And with that, George Rorick, CEO, Lake Chelan Community Hospital. George, I began to say you've not been here a real long time yet, and you walk right into something like this, not only with trying to build a new hospital and delays and whatnot going on there, but now a COVID-19 pandemic. What's been happening at Lake Chelan Community Hospital?
It's been a fine welcome. At the hospital right now, we are making preparations, training, and planning to sustain as much healthcare services as we can into the future. You know, we firmly believe that there will be an outbreak, and bringing friends and family to their appointments instead just coming by themselves, if possible. We are also gonna begin to restrict access and ask all people to call. If we haven't called you for a regular outpatient appointment, such as physical therapy, for example, to ensure that you're healthy before you come into the hospital and don't put other patients and staff at risk of contamination. So those things are happening. We will be talking continuously about these to our community and through our staff.
George, I know the hospital has put into place the ICS, which is the Incident Command System, and I don't know if you want to speak to that or if Maria does or Ray or whatever, but I'd like to get some details on what that really means. You hear a lot of acronyms thrown out, but you know, what is ICS?
So we have several leaders of that, and Ray is probably our poster child, and I'd like to have him talk about that.
All right, so we'll be introducing now Ray Eichmeier, the EMS director, and Ray, tell us about that. The Incident Command System, what does that really entail?
So what it really entails is us communicating in a very specific way to talk about our planning and situation. And we are in constant contact with our fellow partners, and other healthcare organizations also do the similar way of, operating. So it's a heightened, very specific time where we come together daily, talk about what's going on, where we're at, what we need to do, and changing of plans, because this is evolving very quickly and changing quickly, just like for the school districts, also for us. It also means us opening up new ways to communicate to other resources and authorities. That means the other 12 hospitals in our region, the public health district, and of course the state of Washington, the Department of Health, Healthcare Authority, and WSHA. So we're in constant contact to making sure we know what they're doing, they know what we're doing, and we're on the same page, and we get the best practices from the most intelligent people in the area or the state.
I'm curious, when you respond, when first responders go out, if it's an ambulance call, fire department shows up as well, have things changed in how you go out now and deal with the public? Do you mask up, for example? Is any of that happening?
So yes, the dispatch is doing screening upon the 911 calls, and then they are messaging us on our communication devices of if this is a suspected COVID-19 patient, and then we have a procedure to go in to assess and care for that patient and proper protective equipment and also proper services for that patient. So we're taking this very seriously, not only to protect our first responders, but also protect the community.
So when the fire department responds alongside, they're following the similar guidelines?
Yes, we're all on the same page. We are meeting, we have the same protocol, and yes, to answer the question.
So I have a question that pertains to those that may actually go out and respond to calls. We know that the age category that's most susceptible to the virus is 60 plus, for example. If you were to have a paramedic or a first responder, a firefighter, a volunteer or something, are they relaying that it may be virus related and then maybe not having certain age groups respond? Has it gotten down to that point?
I don't know. I can't speak for the fire departments on that case, but I know with the protective equipment that we have, even if they are at that risk age, we'll be able to protect our first responders appropriately.
All right, thank you for that. Mary Louise Jones, Clinic Administrator, Columbia Valley Health Community Health. The CVCH is how that is known most of the time. Mary Louise, I want to thank you for being here today and tell us what's happening at your clinic.
Thank you for having me. And as you all mentioned, especially the hospital and the community medicine, that we are collaborating very closely with our other healthcare partners. And that folks have been very proactive. CVCH also stood up an incident command center very early on and continue to run that, not only to allow us to coordinate with other agencies, but also help us to manage our daily operations as we're also preparing for different scenarios, what would happen. And this is actually allowing us the CVCH is continuing to be fully functional and provide services to the patients. Across all of our sites, including certainly our Chelan clinic. What we have been doing, though, is that we've been very proactive about screening or encouraging individuals that if they have symptoms and are concerned to call ahead, even if they have a scheduled appointment, so that they can talk with the medical personnel, and that personnel can then advise them whether or not they could stay home, certainly manage their symptoms. Should they come in, they've got some other injury or illness, so that we can do it safely and that they're well taken care of. For those who actually come into our clinics, we have screeners at various entrances so that individuals are already screened before they even enter. At the Lake Chelan Clinic, we're having somebody screen, and then we actually have a separate space that if individuals, we are concerned about their symptoms, that they may resemble COVID-19, that we do have the ability to test, and we're doing that very safely using the proper protective equipment for our staff, making sure that they're not around other patients, and so it is safe to go to the clinics, certainly, to get your needs met, healthcare needs, both here at Chelan, obviously, and then throughout the valley at the agencies. And so, again, certainly we are being very proactive about looking at our supplies and making sure that we can continue to provide supplies. Certainly testing individuals and working with the health departments. And fortunately, again, there are no other positive tests that anyone knows about. It suggests that we are doing a very good job about managing things here, at least with some of the social distancing and other things, but that the healthcare agencies are doing a very good job as well with screening individuals and certainly continuing to take care of their medical needs. However, we don't want folks to not meet another medical need because they're concerned. Rather, we would want them to call us so that we can provide advice and people get the best care.
Then I know early on it was recommended that obviously to make the phone calls first before showing up someplace, but if it is a true emergency, to certainly call as you would any time 911, correct?
Absolutely, and we would certainly, if they call, and certainly would also suggest they go to the ER or call 911 if in fact when they're screened over the phone, absolutely. The other thing that we've been very done is certainly be very cautious with our staff, making sure that our staff, we're practicing a lot of social distancing and having a lot of virtual meetings, encouraging any staff that may have any symptoms. Obviously, there are colds and flus and things absolutely not related to COVID. Encouraging them to stay home and work from home and actually having a formalized system so that we know that they're safe to come back again. That's not suggesting that anybody's positive or that we're concerned. It's just we're being very, very cautious to make sure that the people that provide health care are also well and are providing good health care.
Do you have any numbers? Have you tested for the virus at your facility?
We have been testing throughout this last 2 weeks. Again, I think it's around 20. However, again, that doesn't mean that they're positive or that we've just from the screening questions that we've been very proactive with testing. We also have been certainly as we're getting more kits to test, that may increase the testing. We anticipate certainly some of our other health partners possibly testing more as more kits come in. So again, I think just the number of tests doesn't necessarily mean that there's any greater risk. It just means there may be greater availability, more people coming in as we're screening them and just being very proactive.
And the process of, if tested locally, then that test is sent to a lab somewhere else?
At this current time, it is, again, things change almost hourly with some of that we may have a greater capability to not only get tests back sooner, but certainly not have to send out again, it probably even the next few days, things are going to change.
All right. Anything else, Mary Louise, at this point you'd like to add?
No, other than again, I think the healthcare organizations and all the organizations seem to be in the Valley, that just coordinating things and people being very proactive, I think will be a tremendous boon and will hopefully make us successful, that if there is an outbreak here or we see more symptomatic folks, that we will really be able to control the impact.
And health officials, one thing they seem to be reporting is that we have yet to see the worst. And that seems to be pretty much what everybody is agreeing to. Is that how you feel about it?
I think there are some discussions that we have not seen certainly the peak yet, although I think some of the major discussion within the medical community is the more measures that we can do, the peak may not be as high, and so that the more we can do, we may still have cases, certainly, but that it won't overwhelm our healthcare system. And so, again, we don't necessarily believe that we could completely be symptom-free across the board in Eastern Washington. Certainly are there cases, but that the things that we're doing now is going to certainly help really mitigate any negative effects.
Mary Louise, thank you very much. And if we can pass that down the line, we want to welcome in from Lake Chelan Community Hospital the Chief Quality Officer, Maria Sirwa. And Maria, thank you for joining us today. And let's talk about some of the things going on at Lake Chelan Community Hospital. And one of those would be, as we heard from Mary Louise, any idea of how many folks have been tested at the hospital?
As
or
of
the
this
clinic?
Morning, two tested, two negative. So I think probably, as Mary Louise mentioned, that will increase in the next week or two, the amount of testing that we do. So at this time, just two.
And you already had results back on those tests then?
Yes.
All right. Are those sent off to Seattle? Are they going to the UW lab? I know they've been doing a lot of the testing.
Quest Diagnostics is online as well at this time.
Okay. And again, what about things like, it was mentioned about making sure you have supplies, those kinds of things. And I think we're in a different dynamic here in Eastern Washington probably than the other side. But I'm hearing reports of some of the clinics and hospitals that, for example, their staff are having to use masks for extended periods of times because they're going through them and they don't have enough in stock. How are we locally here?
As far as masks go, at this point in time, and again, these things are changing, we're fine on masks. Our materials manager has been really proactive in looking ahead and monitoring our supplies on a daily basis and locating and finding alternatives so that if supplies do get low, that we have other choices that we can use. So different types of gowns and things like that.
Lots of conversation as well, again, outside of Eastern Washington, but I'll take a look at that in a moment. Thank you. We are a fluid conversation here as well, and I completely lost my train of thought. Oh, I know. It had to do with the testing kits and a lack of training kits, testing kits in some areas. Are we okay on that? You have plenty of kits if all of a sudden you get a run on people that want to come in and be tested.
I guess it depends on how many people were to come and get tested. I think at this time we do have additional kits on order, and we do have a protocol for who gets tested. As we all know, the CDC and public health has become a little bit more relaxed on who gets tested, but we're still trying to be vigilant and make sure that we have those kits for patients that really need to be tested.
When you folks get together and have your communication about how you deal with a public health situation like this, what about staffing? Do you plan and say, you know, it's okay now, but if it does get worse, if it were to get worse, do you have plans in place to limit, if you can, the stress on your doctors and nurses and your EMS folks? Do you have dialogue on that?
So I'm glad you asked about the staff. I think the staff are really engaged in a lot of discussions that we're having. And as Mary Louise mentioned, we are also monitoring our staff and have a process for employee illness reporting. And we track that on a daily basis. Our employee health nurse is working with those employees that, you know, call in. So that's something we're definitely keeping a touch on. We've done additional staff education as well, and we're encouraging people in every single one of our departments, if they have ideas on any other measures that we can put in place, we encourage that dialogue. Just to give you an example, our dietary department, I think, had some great ideas that we've implemented that I haven't heard about from other facilities. We put the salad bar away, so there's no more salad bar, which is a great opportunity for cross-contamination. We're using disposable utensils and containers now, so you know, we're really encouraging every single department to think about things they can do specifically in their area that might help in these efforts.
Any other advice to pass along, and we can do this around the room, to our residents here in terms of do's and don'ts? You know, we've talked about social distancing. That's kind of a buzzword now. It's difficult to live out, certainly, to have social distancing. So interesting how that will actually end up being. And social distancing, does that mean only indoors as opposed to outdoors? I'm not sure. But what are some of the tips, the basic things that will help in people, at least to some degree, safeguarding themselves from getting the virus?
I think one of the things is, I think people might not be aware of how much we touch our faces and things like that every day, and also touch surfaces around you that many other people touch. We call these high-touch surfaces. And so even in your home, you know, the door handles to get into your building and things like that, just to be aware of what you're coming into contact with, and to think about, you know, any extra steps you can take in your own home to keep things sanitary and clean. And we've heard this all a million times, but frequent hand hygiene, hand washing. I know hand sanitizers are probably pretty hard to find out in the market now, but good old hand hygiene, hand washing, and keeping things clean.
All right, thank you for that. We appreciate it. And Mary Louise, anything to add to the do's and the don'ts?
I think one of the other thing is to really keep folks informed, and sometimes it's very easy for wild rumors, and that only actually increases kind of anxiety. I'm very happy that folks are focusing on making sure that children are not anxious. Again, there's the tremendous attention to this, but certainly as we're encouraging our staff, to everybody to help, let's talk about the rumors, but to not kind of fervor or kind of contribute to things. And again, being very respectful and kind to each other. As we get through this, there'll be things that certainly are bad, but to not make it worse with that, and to really help, especially individuals who might feel very anxious.
We had a question that was brought up about the testing, and I think we covered somewhat about how do you get tested if you think you have symptoms, and to make the calls and or call your own healthcare provider, or, you know, go through that process. Question though, relating to the test itself, is will it cost $1,000 or more to get tested? You know, everybody's got budgets to deal with, and you certainly probably don't want the fear of, can I pay for something to stop somebody that may be in need of a test? What's the status on that?
We've certainly heard from the government that there would be waivers of any co-pays related to testing, and so I think we want to really encourage folks that they shouldn't be staying home and or deciding not to get tested, even if they're symptomatic, because of the cost, that they can come in and get tested. And as we were talking actually earlier about governmental, there may be monies with some of these issues now to be able to get reimbursement. But I think the main message is to tell patients that if that should not be, they should be coming in if they're being told to come in and get tested, that won't be a burden to them to pay for that.
All right, thank you. If you could pass that to Mayor Getty for a moment, a quick question. Bob, one of the things that came up, I know, at the city level was, what about things like garbage service and all those utility, those typical functions, that's still all in play, correct?
That's all in place. I think there's enough redundancy that if one gets it and we don't have to send everybody home, quarantine will be okay. But as you may remember, in 2015, when we had our fires go and staff was able to fire up the auxiliary generator and get our water system going, those are the kinds of things when you stop and think, if you don't have water. So we really need to double back and make sure you have enough people to run it, even if the supervisors have to come in. So that's a prime concern.
I thought you were trying just to get my attention.
No,
yes.
I apologize.
Lonnie Brown, Lakeland Now.
Hi there, Lakeland Now. We did not intend for this to be an interactive presentation, but it has become one. And so we're getting some questions that I thought, while we have everybody here, we should ask. There is a perception that you are not going to be tested unless your fever is 100.4 or higher, and people are concerned that if they have taken Advil because they don't feel well, that they will not qualify for a test anymore.
Would you like to tackle that one, or you want to pass it down?
I could certainly tackle that one. We actually have a number of criteria that we're using to really assess somebody, so it isn't one single one. And certainly talking with the patient about that and bringing that up with the patient. So again, we are making efforts to making sure that they get a full assessment of whether or not they meet the criteria.
All right, let's pass this one back around. I want to get George on. George, I want to circle back around to a comment that was made by Superintendent Charlton earlier. And again, it's one of those things, I think so much is happening that you lose sight of maybe what ifs or what could happen. And with schools being out on the west side, and again, he made the point, lots of people from Western Washington have second homes over here. And if everybody's out of school, why not, you know, go to Chelan? And so hearing that and knowing that that's actually occurring and that there has been some interaction between students from Western Washington with the school district here about maybe participating with athletic teams and whatnot, at least on a practice level, does that raise another concern now that that could be an element that might add more risk to this part of the woods, knowing that you've got people coming from Western Washington where the virus is obviously more prevalent?
I would have to say, personally, I think, you know, the virus is here. Most of the people in this valley are healthy, but there are people at risk, and that's who we need to watch out for. I think we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but what we at the hospital and the clinics are really trying to do, and you'll hear it from the Department of Health, is we're trying to slow down the infection rates and allow technology and science to catch up. There is a little delay, which is why we have these discussions about, can I get tested? Well, we don't have as many test kits as we would like. I see sometime in the future, the near future, where testing for coronavirus will be just like getting tested for the flu. There'll be a rapid test. You can go in and get it anytime. That will happen, but until it does, we have to ration or use discretion of the available test resources we have. The thing that makes the situation that puts us in is now we have to estimate what the infection rate is in our community because we cannot prove it absolutely through testing. And so we see the school taking precautions because of these unknowns. We are all taking similar precautions. The hospital has discontinued all of our community meetings and events and support groups and things like that to slow down the infection rate until technology and supplies can catch up. So I might have taken your question in a different direction, but I really wanted to say these things and get this word out.
No, all information is useful at this point, and I appreciate the comments. George, while you've got it, I want to ask you maybe this in terms of how do you address or maybe help people if they ask the concerns that they have, because it's pretty, to some degree, and I hate to use the P word, political, but I liken it somewhat to politics in terms of how people weigh in on the coronavirus. There are those that on one side are ultra concerned and are, you know, fully in support of measures that will mitigate the spread. There are others, very vocal, that think, it's nothing more than the flu, and why are we making such a big deal out of this? And, you know, 35 to 40,000 people die a year from the flu, and nobody thinks anything about it. We've got, you know, small numbers of this right now. I think I know part of the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you, should there be legitimate concern about this, and how do you maybe get those two groups closer together?
So we need to respect everybody's position and acknowledge their fears or their comfort with where we are with this infection. I think it was our governor that spoke yesterday and said if we don't do our best, each and every one of us, to stop this spread, we will be killing our grandfathers and those people in our population, in our community, who are most vulnerable, typically the elderly and those people with underlying health concerns or conditions. So it would be easy to say, oh, this is being blown up to a great big thing, but we see these vulnerable populations in our community and every other community that are at huge risk. And we've seen the nursing home situation in Kirkland, and that's a prime example that could be repeated in community after community. And we can't turn our back on that population, on those people, on our elderly family members.
Yeah, you mentioned nursing homes, and we should probably point out, it would be appropriate now, that here at Heritage Heights, for example, in Chelan, they have gone along with the state guidelines, and they are restricting access to their facility. As I understand it, each resident can have one visit per day, and that visitor has to go through a verbal screening process when they show up at the facility, and I believe have their temperature taken, and then the visit has to occur inside the resident's room. They have stopped all of their group activities, for example, for the residents. So all elements in some regard are reacting to what is happening with this situation. George, anything you want to add as we are kind of winding down here from the Lake Chelan Community Hospital Clinic's perspective?
Sure. I would just like to add for everybody that has interest, and everyone should, to check out the Department of Health, the Community Public Health website, and CDC, of course. That's where the best information is, short of a meeting like this. And get the straight poop. If not, call your clinic. And if you have a question, I'm sure both clinics have ways to get you the information you need, settle your fears, or provide you care.
Yeah, I would say this. If you just go online and Google coronavirus, you will get scads of hits. There'll be no lack of information for you. But if you want to hone it in a little more, in our particular region here, a real good resource is the Chelan Douglas Health District. And we'll have links up to some of these websites, but they are www.cdhd.wa.gov. And they have specific information that breaks it out county by county, the numbers who have tested positive in the state of Washington. It gives the death totals and where they came from. And again, the preponderance of that right now is Western Washington, although we did have a coronavirus death in Grant County, fairly nearby. So it isn't like it isn't in Eastern Washington at all. So George, I thank you for being a part of the roundtable discussion here today. We really appreciate your input.
Thanks for the opportunity.
You're very welcome. We're just going to kind of come around the table and continue on. And Maria, go ahead and keep it there. And I would ask you, I know you want to get rid of that microphone, as quickly as you can. Any closing comments maybe from your perspective, or something we had not touched on that you would like to get out?
I would just say, you know, as stated before, we're monitoring this on a daily basis, and we are trying to get information out as quickly as we can via press releases of changes that we are making at our facility, so we will continue to do that. I think that's really the biggest thing, is just, you know, keep tuned for additional communications of further changes that we are making to our processes.
All right, thank you very much. We appreciate your presence here at the roundtable today. It's been very helpful. Ray, back over to you if you want to pick that up. And I know we didn't talk a whole lot in terms of what's happening at the EMS side, and there's probably more there. Anything else that you would like to add?
I would like to mimic what George said, is that we just need to now, if we're on the next step up of heightened alert and processes, is just take it seriously. I know it's really hard to do, but social distancing is very important for us to stop the rapid spread of this disease. And I'm concerned about it. And I think if you can, it's tough decisions, right? But it's not easy, but if we could do that, we are going to infect less people, possibly save lives. So it's just really important that you take seriously what's going on now, and we are taking it very seriously, but we are here to help, and we're here to serve, and we're going to do this together. But we need everyone to do their civic duty and pay attention and do the things that public health is saying we should do.
Thank you very much, Ray. Appreciate that. Barry DePauli, there's probably no group more vocal at times than parents of children. And as an educator, that's certainly what you deal with. And so you're putting a lot of plans in place. You're making tons of changes to schedules. It's affecting people's lives. Now we're staring in the face of perhaps the schools being closed down at a future date. I'm not saying we're doing that, but it could occur. You're planning for that occurrence. And that'll, I'm sure, trigger a whole other degree of parental feedback, because now you've got people that rely on those kids being at school. We talked about some, it's their only meal time, for example, legit meal, but also the fact that as you get into some of the younger children that can't care for themselves, now mom and dad, who may have to be out working to, you know, take care of that family, all of a sudden they've got a dilemma.
Dennis, I'd like to just go back to something George said. I really think he made a good point where we have to respect both sides of this issue. And I guess I would send this message out to our parents. I see this as two things. There's a science part of this and there's the humanity part of this. And when I look at this country and just the minds we have here and the ability and science we have, and I think about the University of Washington, which is a leading research institution, I have a lot of confidence and then we're going to get through this. And I would say that the human side of this is for all of us here, including adults, that we need to model a sense of a hope and optimism, and I see that in this room, and I would encourage parents to have that same mindset that we really need to model for our young folks. And it's our obligation, as Ray said, to take care of each other. Not just take care of ourselves, but take care of our children, but also our elderly. That's an obligation we all have. So our neighbors, all that plays in point. My recent letter that I sent out, Dennis, I addressed some of that in that, you know, we are going to, there is an imminent school closure. It's coming. I see it. We've been preparing for it. And what I see happening is we're reaching out to parents to say, who can help with childcare? Is it a neighbor? Is it someone who, you know, we have to protect each other, but we still have to rely on each other. So I think if I'm confident that the science in this country, especially at the University of Washington, I see some health professionals in this room that I have total confidence in. We get great feedback from our local health districts, and the collegiality of the education profession has been phenomenal in this region, led by our ESD superintendent, Michelle Price. And as I said earlier, I think Matt and I probably converse twice or three times a day. So I think we have a better handle on this than probably in Seattle. It didn't come up as quickly, so we've had some time to prepare. So I think we're in a good place, and we will continue to communicate often and regularly with the public as this unfolds.
And Barry, from the school district standpoint, if there are parents or others in the community out there who have a concern or a comment or a question about something pertaining to the school district, what's the best avenue for them to get that information?
Yeah, if it's to a specific school, obviously contact the school. If it's a broader question, you can certainly email me or contact the district directly, 682-3515. Georgia Mashiach takes those calls. I try to return those calls as soon as possible, so I would encourage people to certainly ask any questions they have, but I feel like we're in a good place.
Have you been getting much questioning?
You know, we get a little bit of feedback, but not a lot really, Dennis. It's been, I have to say, our community's been extremely cooperative with the social distancing we've asked for. We've shut down a lot of events. We've shut down hosting events, and I have to say people have been really, really cooperative and understanding. So I thank the public for that. Want to thank our staff as well, who's working, especially our custodial staff, who has been working extremely hard to keep things disinfected throughout the school district. And there's a lot of square feet here we work with, so those guys have been working especially hard following national guidelines. So I think we've really upped our game on that place, and I think we're ready for the days ahead in terms of where we're at preparation-wise.
All right, and Barry, I want to thank you profusely for making your facility available here today. It's a nice setting and sets up well, and we appreciate your help.
Well, I thank you, Dennis. This is timely, and I want to thank all the panelists here for being here today and giving up their time. I think getting this out to the community is really important.
All right, thank you so much. And we have one member of the media here who also would like to ask a question, Richard Uhlhorn.
First, Dennis, thanks for inviting me to come to this. I think it's very important that all of the media knows what's going on. I have a question for the health agencies. During fire season, wildfire season, we have state MOB situations. And this morning I read that Evergreen Hospital in Kirkland, the doctors are frustrated, very, very tired because they're working way over time and the hospital's totally full. Is there any possibility that there may be a state MOB for physicians or whatever to go help some of these doctors that are working 18, 19, 20 hours a day?
Well, I've been involved with regional preparedness and state preparedness for probably the last decade in Washington. And there is not that type of structure in healthcare, and like the state MOB is for fighting wildfires and forest fires. And there is a limited federal assistance, we call federal medical station teams, and those are usually deployed to larger populations. So the short answer is no, but I think we have intelligent intelligent people at the state who will adapt and will figure out a way. And I don't think we're alone. And I think, especially in the North Central region, and I know I said this to a group just earlier this week, we've got a special community here. And you know what? We're going to make something happen. When the need is there, we're going to step up.
And Ray, I'll ask you one last question. As someone involved in emergency response, even though we're not through this at all, but there is a lot happening, a lot being learned. Do you think that we'll take out of this a process that in the future, for the next event that might happen, whatever that might be, that there'll be platforms in place that will make it easier to respond to?
Well, usually preparedness is the last thing that's funded, right? And so, like, everything else is more important until you need it, right? And now we need it, and now, oh my, we should have funded this all along, right? So here we are. I don't know what to say.
So beat the drum for funding, I think, is what you just said. Let's pass this over and get some final comments, if we can, from Mary Louise Jones, CBCH. And again, thank you so much for being here today. We really appreciate your input. Any final comments?
Just that all agencies are working out to make sure that we don't have burnout and that we are really using a good use of our staff and thinking about it in the long term. Okay, if this goes on for a while, how can we spread out our resources so that we're not burning everything out? I think just to remind folks that even if we start seeing many more people getting tested, it's probably much more that we're having the kits, that we're being able to do that, and really committed to the health of the community as opposed to any increase in risk or anything. It's just that we're very committed to the health of the community and that we're going to collaborate together to use the resources that we do have. To make sure that they do last for the long haul.
All right, we thank you very much. I should point out that everybody represented here, I know CBCH, Lake Chelan Community Hospital, obviously the school district, the city of Chelan, everybody has their own websites, and we would encourage people that you can go to those individual websites and seek information there as pertains to that particular entity. Lots of information available, as we talked about, from the Chelan-Douglas Health District and from the CDC. There are some national sites as well. I did not even bother to give out, we've had it in stories earlier on Lake Chelan Now, the hotline number for the coronavirus, because my understanding is you're going to dial it and you're going to be on hold forever. And if you're sick, it may be too late by the time you got someone to talk to you. So anyway, we'll let that part of it go. If we could pass it down to our Mayor Bob Getty here. Bob, for any final thoughts, maybe from yourself or from the city?
Well, there is one I was thinking about, and that's, where do people get information that don't live here? And I think our Chamber of Commerce is probably the prime people call. So we're going to be working with the chamber on putting information on there for somebody that might call. They might do City Hall, but most of the information comes out of the chamber that goes over to our visitors. And the other thing is, we're working with Cozy Radio to do a PSA in Spanish, because one of our council members is bilingual. So Savando has set up to do that. And at the end of the day, we'll pick out the most important information up to date and do a PSA on Sunday.
All right. And I will add, LakeChelanNow.com has a ton of information online, and you can just search coronavirus in our search bar and you'll come up with every story that we have done up to this point, and most of those pertain to our local community here. Lots of school information, hospital information, clinic information, senior center information, which, by the way, they have closed down as well here in Chelan, as have the other two locations in Chelan County, but they are still doing meals, but now by pickup only, Monday through Thursday at the Chelan Senior Center. The Friday meals at North Shore Bible Church, they're canceled for the time being, so we'll put that out there as well. And I guess lastly, I would just say, be safe, practice many of the things that we've talked about here today. Social distancing, now a new buzzword, I think, that everybody knows, and we should be cognizant of that. Wash your hands frequently, and go ahead, Mike, if you would pass it over here. Lonnie, yes, you have a comment.
Yeah, I'm still monitoring our social media, and this is a really helpful question to ask while we have everybody in the room. We've identified some high-risk groups, segments of our community, and given that the senior center is limited and some other avenues that most people are used to turning to, the question is, where do they go for these high-risk people? Because what we don't want is, if somebody's in a high risk, we don't want them leaving their house, but how do they get what they need in order to be healthy and you know, taken care of? So it's just a good question for us to ask ourselves. The aging people, we kind of are starting to fall into that category, Dennis. You know, it's like, where do they turn to?
Who wants to respond to that?
The senior center has Meals on Wheels. How that works out and how you apply to it, I'm not real sure about, but they're still doing Meals on Wheels.
Yeah, they have the Meals on Wheels, and again, they are still doing their normal lunch meal for the seniors on a Monday through Thursday basis. You have to call, by the way, I didn't mention that, by 9:30 in the morning if you want that, Monday through Thursday, and then you have someone drive in and pick it up, and they'll bring it out in the bag to you, and away you go with your lunch. I would suspect, and feel free to chime in here, Ray, but all the other agencies that typically would deal with the aging are still, you know, conducting their business as usual.
Yeah, my understanding is there's all the services are still online, just like our hospital or healthcare system is in full motion of ready to care for people. We at the hospital, we do the paratransit system that delivers the meals to the patients' homes. So just contact the normal, you could contact the senior center, or you could contact our EMS department. We can get you set up with our community paramedicine program. We can get resources to those who wanted to stay home. Obviously, neighbors and this community, you can step up too, right? You see someone that lives next door to you who may be at that higher risk group, then go shopping for them. Do some, you know, help them. And that's what we gotta do. We're in this together.
I guess I'm gonna ask a question here. I've seen it sitting up here on the screen from one of those watching today through this live stream on Facebook on Lake Chelan Now, from Veronica, and she is wondering about, basically questioning, are we just waiting for an outbreak to happen here in the valley before we really do things? And I guess maybe posing the question of, should more be being done right now when many folks are saying it is likely here in the valley? We just maybe don't know yet the people that might be carrying the virus. The consensus after we've had this conversation, and I hate to start another whole go-round, but are we doing the right things and are we doing enough? Barry, I'm going to start with you because you're next to me.
Sure. Yeah, I think the school closure is imminent, and you know, we're going to wait for the governor to make that call, but we are fully prepared to do that. And I suspect, to be honest, that by next week we will be closed, and that's just the way I see things unrolling because of how quickly things have transpired.
So what are we doing? We're doing stuff, and that we're doing a lot. First of all, preparing for helping these people. Two, we don't have a vaccine, right? That would be one way to prepare, is everyone get, just like we do with the flu, vaccinate people. So we don't have that. So the next pieces are in mind. We do the mitigations, the things that we know that decreases the chances of infection, and that's what we're doing. We're telling you to separate yourselves, wash your hands, don't touch your face. We, you know these things, and I'm certain the people online know these things too. And closing the school too early, there's evidence that shows that if you close it too early, it does not help with the outbreak. So, and you close it too late, then it's too late for the outbreak, right? So there is a medium ground, and that's where, and I'm proud of our Chelan-Amansa School District of doing the right thing, and that is just making sure they do it at the right time. And so we are not just waiting around to everyone get sick, we're asking you to help us not get sick.
Additionally, we've been in close communication with our health department, and you know, they're staffed with epidemiologists. As a matter of fact, our local epidemiologist used to work for the CDC, and as Ray mentioned, there's a sweet spot of when to start shutting things down. So we have escalated restrictions and closing things down, and the level of activity around these preparations in our facility, and I think others are doing the same, and we're doing that with direction from the health department and other professionals that have lots of experience managing these types of situations.
I think from CVCH's viewpoint, we every day, and I'm sure that the other agencies are doing this as well in the command structure, looking at best practices, which seem to be certainly updating every day. We're learning a lot from how it's going in Europe and internationally and what to do, so that putting into place new things if we're finding that they're working, and so not just sitting back and kind of waiting for things to happen, but absolutely continuing to be as proactive as possible and really using those things that work, knowing that there is still likelihood that there will be some individuals that are positive despite the efforts. But what we can do is absolutely mitigate those times and certainly at least slow down the rates, as you had mentioned.
I think it was good to point out that there is no vaccine. I'm glad that came up. It was in my notes here, which I have a gazillion of and touched on a few. One that we didn't also talk about, and since you've got the microphone here, Mary Louise, are the symptoms. And I know obvious fever, cough, shortness of breath, respiratory issues, those types of things, sore throat. Are we missing some things in there? Are there other things that people should be watching for if they have a concern about this?
Certainly folks have felt the feelings of unwell. Unfortunately, all the symptoms you mentioned are like many other disorders that individuals may experience. And so it is very, very difficult to say, boy, this person, because they have these symptoms, we know for certain that they don't or do. We know that there has been the flu. This is a time of year that people get the flu as well, and colds and things that are very similar symptoms. Again, in addition to those symptoms, certainly we're also screening for folks who, depending on if they have been exposed to somebody or have been in areas that maybe that they had increased likelihood of exposure.
All right. Anybody else before we wrap things up here? That yes, Mr. Mayor.
Just the same thing. I think this is a balancing act. If we pull the plug too early, within a couple weeks, they're going to get upset because nothing's happening. Then they're going to start not paying attention to what's going on. So I think it's really relevant to do the right thing at the right time. In our case, we have everything in line, if it does turn bad, to make sure that we can keep the essential services going.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Mayor Getty. All right. With that, thank you for those of you that have been watching on our live stream. And this will continue to be available online on the LakeChelanNow.com Facebook page. We also, hopefully it is working away, we're audio recording this, and I'll endeavor to download that audio and post it up on our website as well, so that will be available at any time for people to listen to if they weren't able to do so live. And with that, I'd like to thank again Barry DePauli, Superintendent, Lake Chelan School District, for hosting us here today and for his participation, obviously, as well. Superintendent from Manson Schools, Matt Charlton, our Mayor, Bob Getty, Mary Louise Jones, Clinic Administrator, Columbia Valley Community Health off to my left. Also to Maria Sirwab, Chief Quality Officer, Lake Chelan Community Hospital. To George Rorick, the CEO from Lake Chelan Community Hospital. To Ray Eichmeyer, the EMS Director. Thank you one and all. And for now, Dennis Rahm on LakeChelanNow.com.